It's Wednesday, June 3rd. I'm Akilah Hughes.
And I'm Gideon Resnick, and this is What a Day, where we are asking police if we can borrow one of their big armored trucks to help drive people to work.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have them, and you clearly don't need them, so just toss the keys.
My hands are open. On today's show, a look at the president's powers to send military into American cities, then some headlines.
But first, the latest.
Great. First things first, Chief Moore, you gotta do a better job of pretending you care about this, man. I've been watching you roll your eyes and offer half-hearted smirks, acting like a teenager who's falling asleep in detention. Are you not aware of the war crimes your department's doing, or are you just that impatient to go do more of them? I see a lot of you, particularly Soboroff, only react when folks use profanity in their remarks. If you think curse words are bad, wait until you hear about these 600-plus murders your department has committed over the last 7 years. As long as Moore's out here equating peaceful protesters with cops who murder black people, you all could pretend to be as angry about murder as the F word. Okay, kids?
Whew.
Wow.
Brap. Pew. Okay. That was one of hundreds of Los Angeles residents who called in yesterday to the LA Police Commissioner's meeting to demand the department be defunded, the leadership resign, and protesters be allowed to make their voices heard. Yes.
Yeah. A good use of Zoom, finally. All over the country, we've continued to see people flooding the email and voicemail inboxes of their elected officials, giving money to organizations that are on the front lines fighting for racial justice and protesting in the streets with no signs of fading.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, there's still no charges for the three officers in Minnesota who stood by as their fellow officer killed George Floyd. And the world is watching. We've also had protests in New Zealand, Paris, and other countries continuing.
And in the U.S., we had another day of curfews and heavy policing. In Atlanta, six police officers have now been charged with aggravated assault after tasing two young black people and pulling them from their car while they were stuck in traffic due to the protests. Demonstrations have become violent in some places after dark. In St. Louis and Las Vegas, police officers were shot and injured early on Tuesday morning. And while many marches have been peaceful, thousands of protesters have also been arrested, and we're still in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, you know, we got to keep up with all of the trauma from this year.
So we talked about Trump's speech on Monday in response to the protests, but yesterday we got a speech from presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. Akilah, what did he have to say in this?
So Biden gave a really powerful speech. You know, he was showing much needed leadership in these fraught times, which is a major contrast from hiding in a bunker. He said that Donald Trump had turned the nation into a, quote, battlefield. He spoke about inequality and racial injustice and called for unity. Here's a clip.
It's going to take the work of a generation. But if this agenda will take time to complete, it should not wait for the first 100 days of my presidency to get started. A down payment on what is long overdue should come now, should come immediately. I call on the Congress to act this month on measures that will be the first step in this direction.
Yeah, I mean, it goes without saying, but I have a lot more faith in Biden, who, you know, is proposing federal legislation to reform the police now, not if and when he's in office, but right now. A lot more faith in him than in the idiot holding a Bible upside down while gassing his own people.
Yeah. And this is all part of the Biden campaign trying to shift him into this more assertive and public facing role in the midst of a very trying campaign, and reflects how, you know, the once tough on crime Democrat is really working to meet this moment. So, to that point, let's talk a little bit about the specific policies that Biden was calling for.
Sure. Okay, so Biden is proposing a federal ban on police officer chokeholds. He wants to see national guidelines created for the use of force by police, which is super important because it means the federal government can hold police accountable across the board. He also called for ending the transfer of extra military equipment to police departments that deploy them on, you know, the people that they've been sworn to protect, the people who pay for their salaries. All of this is in addition to the police reform platform he laid out in his campaign. And he also committed to laying out more robust policies on systemic racism and the endless pain in this country in the coming weeks. So we will absolutely report when we know more. And I want to highlight one more move in the right direction. So following these protests, the Minneapolis Public School District is terminating their contract with the local police department. The University of Minnesota is also ending its contract, and the Minnesota Department of Human Rights filed a civil rights charge against the Minneapolis Police Department with an investigation to come. So that's really good to see. And we've been talking protests around the country, but let's focus in on D.C. for a moment today.
Yeah, so there was a lot coming out of D.C. And we talked yesterday about, you know, following this dystopian and abhorrent display orchestrated by the administration on Monday evening, in which peaceful protesters were violently confronted so that President Trump could take part in a photo op in front of St. John's Church. That night gave way to more aggression from law enforcement. There were images and videos of these surreal moments, including helicopters flying low over protesters as if they were in a war zone, as well as military vehicles that were in the street. But there was at least one act of solidarity with the protesters that got some deserved attention. A local resident, Rahul Dubé, reportedly opened the door of his house as dozens of protesters realized that they had been boxed in by officers in riot gear on his street. He assisted some who had been hit with either pepper spray or gas as law enforcement rushed to his doorstep. Pizza was delivered, and the protesters remained in the home until curfew ended at 6 a.m.
You know, I hope that my 13-year-old son grows up to be just as amazing as they are, and I hope that they continue to fight, and I hope they go out there today peacefully as they did yesterday and not blink, because our country needs them and needs you and everybody more than ever right now.
Seems like a solid dude. And Dubé is not an anomaly. The excessive force and escalation in D.C. have prompted a lot of people to stand up for these protesters and to join them.
Yeah. All of this has reignited a conversation about D.C. statehood and the lack of representation that the city has. That's why military officers were able to deploy so quickly on those protesters, in addition to all of the local law enforcement.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a city with a population that is larger than states like Wyoming. It is predominantly Black, and where the residents are subject to the whims of the federal government without getting direct representation in it.
And they pay taxes.
Mm-hmm. But to the point that you brought up about the military, as we talked about yesterday, Trump leveled this threat to deploy them in states around the country if governors don't squash the unrest. And in order to do this, though, experts' understanding is that Trump would have to use the Insurrection Act of 1807. Now, basically, in its original writing, which is now over 200 years old, the president is allowed to deploy military troops in the U.S. if their view is that it is necessary to stop a, quote, insurrection that would threaten the state or residents within it. It can also be invoked if there is interference with state or federal law. But the irony of Trump's conversation about it now to quell protests against racist police violence is that historically the act has been used to actually prevent racist violence. So, for example, in 1957, when a division of the U.S. Army was used to escort 9 Black students to school in Little Rock, Arkansas, all because the governor there had used the state's National Guard to prevent them from entering and integrating the schools. Mm-hmm. In subsequent years, it was also used to enforce civil rights laws in Mississippi and Alabama. But in 1967, President Johnson used the act for riots that were taking place in Detroit and then protests following the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1968. There's also more recent precedent for using it in response to protests against police brutality, like in 1992 when President H.W. Bush did so in Los Angeles, and that was following the acquittal of the cops who brutally beat Rodney King.
Yeah, so I guess you're saying there's a chance, that Trump could actually invoke this power, though.
There is a chance. The one provision that people have talked about, though, in this context is whether you need a governor or state to request the assistance. Now, as of this recording, no state has, and some governors have outright expressed their opposition to doing so. But experts don't think that a request is always necessary. It could ultimately be one of those things that ends up in the president's discretion. But there are other provisions that make it somewhat murky. One is that it broadly refers to if the president deems such an action necessary. And the caveat here is this is something that was written centuries ago and couldn't have exactly predicted this particular moment and set a precedent for it. It is understood, though, that before invoking it, the president would have to issue a proclamation calling for people to disperse and giving them time to do so. So It's all a bit fluid now and unclear where this will go. Trump hasn't mentioned this act specifically, and he often throws things out like this as a trial balloon. So we'll have to see, but a very scary and serious threat nonetheless. More soon on all of that, but that is the latest for now.
It's Wednesday, Wad Squad, and it is temp check time. And I am exhausted. So, Giddy, would you like to take the lead on this today?
I got you. So Thank you. You might have seen a flurry of all black squares posted on Instagram. You were not having a stroke and losing your eyesight. It was part of a social media blackout that was started by two black women in the music industry to pause business as usual and bring attention to the issues of police brutality and racial inequality. It spread quickly and got confused, especially by people hashtagging their posts with hashtag Black Lives Matter, and thereby drowning out important resources in the process. In its best form, people use the day to lift up activist voices, black-owned businesses, artists, journalists, and helpful information. So, Akila, among the hits and misses, any that you want to highlight?
Let's see. I mean, I think the most impactful thing that I saw yesterday was Rihanna. She not only had a black tile, but she had her text on it about, you know, she had this amazing speech that I believe we played a clip from months ago, where she told people to pull up if they care about their black friends and they want to sit at their table and eat with them. And so she, you know, sort of restated that while also stopping all of the business for Savage X Fenty and her makeup lines. You know, she's like, we're not going to, you know, make money today. We're not going to spend money today. We're going to talk about racial justice. And I think that that was huge. I would say a miss is Chris Pratt posting a black square when he is pretty much never, ever, ever, ever gone out of his way to support black people. But I am Salim.
Yeah, I Rihanna, I think, in most of the actions that she does for everything, remains one of the cooler conceivable celebs on the planet.
Yeah, she's kind of like the role model that none of us knew we needed. Like, she's a radical role model.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's very rad.
Yeah, but how about you, Giddy? You see anything you were like, oh, I feel good about this?
You know, so I was cringing at like Doritos and just like a bunch of other ones that were just the Washington Redskins. I mean,
yeah, like come on, read the room, like read your name.
Yeah,
it's on the jersey.
There were just most of them, as with most brands, were cringeworthy. But this wasn't a square, but Ben and Jerry's just put out this statement that was like, we are gonna like end white supremacy, and it was like, it was really, the language in it too was very like keyed in to the way that people actually like view some of these issues. And I was like, wow, there is a full-on Antifa ice cream company. Good for them for doing the reading.
It's true. They definitely like brought up, they're like, this has been a problem since black people arrived on the shores in 1619. And I'm like, go off Ben, go off Jerry. Like,
yes.
They said, you know, Ben and Jerry said Black Lives Matter. So I'm into it.
I know. Yeah, it definitely was one of the more like keyed in brands. So yeah, good for them. Gonna eat some Chunky Monkey. But there you go. We have checked our temperatures. We're going to check back in again with you tomorrow. Avoid the brands, but, you know, do your thing on social media. Whatever.
That's right.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolette Avenue, which is where Alex Preddy was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
Let's wrap up with some headlines.
Headlines.
Almost a third of the unemployment benefits set to go out to millions of Americans have not been paid out yet. That is according to a Bloomberg report, which found that the U.S. Treasury paid out $67 billion less than what they should have paid to unemployed Americans in the last 3 months, based on weekly unemployment filings and average claim sizes. Now, Black Americans have been particularly hit hard by the COVID-19 recession as well. New studies show that Black people were twice as likely to have been laid off or furloughed as their white counterparts, and less than half of Black adults still have their jobs. Economists pointed to racial discrimination and lack of access to opportunities that Black people in our country face.
Yeah, wow. I mean, it seems like the president has other things to be worried about right now. Facebook CEO and quietly seething man Mark Zuckerberg doubled down on his decision to leave President Trump's harmful and misleading posts untouched on the site yesterday. This comes a day after his employees staged a virtual walkout to protest Zuckerberg's inaction on the issue. Twitter, at the very least, slapped a warning label on Trump's recent post about shooting protesters, saying it glorifies violence. Facebook let the same post stay up exactly as is, which makes sense because it really takes a hero to apply a label. Zuckerberg defended his stance, saying that the company's free speech policy allows for the president's post to stay untouched. Some employees, including two higher-up software engineers, have since resigned over the company's lack of action, and civil rights leaders have condemned Zuck's move.
Man, he is just like, it's the opposite of a fine wine, just getting worse and worse.
He's aging like milk.
For Trump, police attacking journalists is a pretty big part of his vision board, but for some other world leaders, it's actually kind of troubling. Australia's prime minister made that clear on Monday when he called for a formal investigation after police in Washington, D.C. went after two Aussie journalists reporting on protests against police brutality. Officers hit those journalists with shields, batons, and fists in a viral clip. That's a little different from what Australians experience back home, where most physical attacks on the press come from aggressive ruse. The journalists beaten in D.C. took their encounter in stride, as you'll hear in this clip.
We'll have a few bruises tomorrow, but we're feeling perfectly safe.
When we asked you about Tim earlier, you said he got a punch in the guts, but he did pretty well. That was a bit of an understatement. Poor bugger got smashed.
We can't allow one poor bugger to get smashed out there anymore. At least 125 press freedom violations have been reported at protests since May 29th.
Oof. Well, if you're wondering where Fuller House's Aunt Becky was, while the real-life Aunt Becky, Lori Loughlin, was pleading guilty to conspiracy to commit fraud, new episodes on Netflix have an answer. She's in Nebraska helping her mother. Was she helping her mother get into USC as a crew team recruit or no? You know, we don't know. Loughlin doesn't appear in the second half of the last season of Netflix's Fuller House, which is a bummer for true crime fans who love to see criminal masterminds on screen. She and her husband, Massimo Giannulli, will be sentenced in August. She will probably be in jail for about as long as it takes to watch Fuller House season 5, which would definitely count as cruel and unusual punishment, but I'm asleep. And those are the headlines.
That's all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, defend us from angry ruse, and tell your friends to listen.
And if you're into reading and not fan theories about Aunt Becky's trip to Nebraska like me, What a Day is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at cricket.com/subscribe. I'm Akilah Hughes.
I'm Gideon Resnick.
And please delete your Facebook. I'm going to. I just have to, like, you know, get some contact info. What a Day is a product of Crooked Media.
It's recorded and mixed by Charlotte Landis.
Sonia Tun is our assistant producer.
Our head writer is John Milstein, and our senior producer is Katie Long.
Our theme music is by Colin Gilliard and Kashaka.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolette Avenue, which is where Alex Preddy was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.